from Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Well, good morning. This is Up North News. I'm founding editor Pat Kreitlow. It is Tuesday, the second day of August. Luke Mathers is our producer. We will chat a little bit more later on, but we're getting right into business today because all 3 hours of our show have featured candidates for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District in Western and Central Wisconsin. Democrat Ron Kind, who has served since being elected in 1996, is retiring, making this one of the most closely watched districts in the country. There are two women and two men running in next Tuesday's Democratic primary to see who will face presumptive Republican nominee Derek Van Orden come November. We had Deb Baldus McGrath in our 8 o'clock hour, Rebecca Cook in our 9 o'clock hour. State Senator Brad Paff will join us in just a moment, and Mark Newman will join us Thursday in our 9 o'clock hour. And I can hear some of you saying, well, how come you couldn't get all four in one day? Well, because that was never our intent. We were going to do one per day, actually, but as it worked out with the various schedules that are out there, I don't know if you know this, candidates are busy. So we find the time where we can find the time, and we found three of them available today and then Mark Newman on Thursday. So that's how we have set all that up. And so having teed things up for Brad Paff, state senator and congressional candidate, Brad, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Pat. Good morning. It's a beautiful morning.
It is. And we're very glad that you took a little time indoors. You're going to get a lot of outdoor time later. I believe this is the evening of Congressman Ron Kind's annual corn roast, something that I've been to a few times. And sadly for me, it's about the only evening a year I get to go polka dancing based on the bands. Usually it's the Ridgeland. Oh, wow.
It's the it's a group from the Cashton area in southern Monroe County, and they do great polka music, and it's a lot of fun. It's bratwurst, it's hot dogs, it's sweet corn, it's everything that's Wisconsin.
It is, and I say that as somebody who I got married in 1986, and mine is still the last wedding reception I've been to that featured just a polka band. Not a band that played some polka music, but it was all polkas all the way through. So now that I've appropriately aged myself, coming from a region that, much like Brad, appreciates farming and polkas and everything else, rather than my giving Brad's bio, as I've done with the other candidates, Brad, let me give you some time here to introduce yourself to the listeners and have a bit of your background.
Well, thank you, Pat, and thank you, listeners. My name is Brad Paff. I am a resident here in La Crosse County. My family's been farming in northern La Crosse County since they first came to this country in the 1800s. I met my wife, Betty, here in western Wisconsin. We've raised our two children, Andrew and Elizabeth, here in western Wisconsin. I've spent most of my adult professional life working for the people of western Wisconsin and Wisconsin overall. I have done agriculture and rural development work for you under Herb Cole, as well as Congressman Ron Kind. I'm proud of the work that we were able to do. And I also think because of some of the work that we were able to accomplish to help our family farmers and our rural residents, I think that's one of the reasons why both Congressman Kind and Senator Cole have endorsed my candidacy. I had the opportunity to spend 8 years as an appointee at the U.S. Department of Agriculture in the Obama administration. And then in December of 2018, it was the honor of a lifetime when Governor-elect Tony Evers contacted me and asked me to serve as Wisconsin's Secretary of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And Pat, I'll be honest with you, I absolutely love that job. Not only did I oversee a team of professionals of 800 individuals that do consumer protection, veterinary science, food safety, agriculture marketing, but I also had the opportunity to travel this state and meet with family farmers and rural residents in cheese plants, in feed mills, livestock yards, in machine sheds, at diners. I sat at their kitchen table. I learned what's happening out in the countryside. And the thing is this, I recognized hearing firsthand from our family farmers the emotional and financial stress that's taking place in our rural communities. And I took those concerns back. I shared them with the governor, but I also shared those concerns with our state legislature. And the thing is this, you know what the legislature said? the partisan legislature said in 2019, they said, Brad, we've heard enough. Sit back down. Well, I'm from Western Wisconsin. I stood up. And they told me to pipe down because I continued to speak up. They told me to pipe down. And I continued to talk. And the thing is this, is they eventually voted me down as Secretary of Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They rejected my nomination. But the thing is this, the people here in Western Wisconsin, La Crosse, Vernon, Crawford, and Southern Monroe counties, 1 year to the day of my rejection as Secretary of Agriculture in the state of Wisconsin, because I had the audacity to speak up for our family farmers, the people here in Western Wisconsin voted me into the state Senate. I'm a Wisconsin state senator. I represent La Crosse, Vernon, Crawford, and Southern Monroe counties in the state legislature. I have stood shoulder to shoulder with Governor Tony Evers as we've fought for tax cuts to help our middle class and our working families. I've stood shoulder to shoulder with Governor Tony Evers as we made sure that we protected voting rights, and make sure that we got elections that people can feel that their vote matters. And I stood shoulder to shoulder as we continue to invest in our rural communities through broadband and infrastructure investment. So that's a little bit about
me. I appreciate that, Brad. Sorry, I've got just a slight delay in our Zoom connection here. Brad Paff introducing himself to you. We're going to take a break in just a second here, and then we're going to get into two 15-minute segments with basically the same questions and topic areas that were addressed of the other candidates in the race so far. So for the better part of an hour at our disposal, we will cover a lot of ground with State Senator Brad Paff, Democratic candidate for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Pleasant, slightly warmer conditions today are going to give way to a chance of thunderstorms, especially in the northern part of the state. Low 80s today, high 80s tomorrow, mid 80s and quiet on Thursday and Friday. We are joined by State Senator Brad Paff, one of the candidates for Congress in Western Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. We're going to cover a lot of the same ground as we did with Deb Baldus McGrath and Rebecca Cook, and then again with Mark Newman on Thursday. And so in those cases, we started, as we will start here, with economic issues, especially inflation. We have a Congress that is tenuous at best in terms of describing its Democratic control. It has been able to do some things, but other things need to be done at a time when there is inflation in the economy, as the economy still tries to make a recovery, as the pandemic is getting better managed, and household budgets really depend on a functional Congress, Brad. So from that standpoint of the economy and inflation, what can Congress do and what can you advocate for to help Wisconsin families and entrepreneurs?
Well, the first thing Congress can do is it can pass the Inflation Reduction Act. President Biden has signed off on it, as has Senator Joe Manchin. And I think that's a first step that needs to get done immediately. The second thing needs to be done is they need to focus like a laser beam on rebuilding our manufacturing. Pat, we have lost way, way too many manufacturing jobs here in Western and Central Wisconsin. Thing is, we in Wisconsin know how to bank things. We know how to design, we know how to engineer, we know how to manufacture, we know how to process. And our workers are second to none. But the thing is, due to some trade policies that we've had over the last 40, 45 years, we have seen this manufacturing empty out, particularly here in the upper Midwest. And that's a real shame. And as a result of that, we have supply chain issues right now that's taking place. And we should not have supply chain issues, but we do, and it's based upon some logistics that we need to do a better job. I was proud that Congress recently passed a semiconductor chip bill. That's long overdue. Let's hope that we can get a semiconductor chip manufacturing plant right here in Wisconsin. We know how to do this. We cannot continue as a nation to continue to rely upon other nations from around the world to continue to feed and provide the manufactured goods in this country.
Brad, when we get into the manufacturing end of things, and especially that semiconductor bill, it takes me to a related area, and that is the tax code and the incentives or the disincentives that it can provide. And a tax code is big and complex and messy, but it does some very powerful things depending on how you work the levers. And we've talked the past couple of hours about the 2017 Republican tax overhaul, which greatly benefited, you know, the upper 1% of wealth in this country. But you can, between the expanded child tax care credit or what you just said about, you know, providing incentives to semiconductor manufacturing, you know, there are a host of things that can be done. So when people just come up to you and talk generally about taxes and what are you going to do about taxes, where are your priorities in what a more democratically controlled Congress could and should do?
Well, it's a great question. And without a doubt, we need a fair and balanced tax code. The first thing I will say is this: look at my record. As a state senator, I voted for a $2 billion with B personal income tax cut. Governor Evers has signed that into law. As a state legislator, I've introduced legislation to eliminate the personal property tax, which is hitting our small business owners. I've been applauded by the small business owners here in this district for continuing to stand up for them. Unfortunately, due to partisan politics, we're not getting that accomplished right now. On the federal level, yeah, we need to take a look at that 2017 tax bill that was signed into law by President Trump. We should not have a situation where Elon Musk pays a lower marginal tax rate than our family farmers or our teachers or our welders here in Western Wisconsin. That needs to be completely changed. And that we need to prioritize. A member of Congress that represents this area must know this district, must have experience in this district, needs to have sat down and met with family farmers and our manufacturers and our small business owners and our families and understand what's happening here and how we can make sure we got a tax policy that works for Main Street and not for Wall Street. And quite frankly, what we have right now in this nation is we have a tax policy that just works for the very few. It doesn't work for the rest of us.
And there's certainly a concern that it's working, you know, again, well for the big boys at the expense of, in this case, we'll talk about family farms. We've spoken at length over decades about the importance of the 3rd Congressional District in terms of, you know, dairy farming. And, you know, once upon a time, we were talking about, you know, dairy price supports, you know, for, you know, class 3 milk or what, you know, what have you. And now it's much more complex because it's no longer a bunch of families watching one benchmark. You have farms that are controlled by larger entities, by corporations, whose farming practices may not be as responsible as, say, a family that lives on that farm. Talk to the listeners here, especially those listening outside the 3rd District, about, you know, what is the state of agriculture in the 3rd Congressional District and how Congress is either helping or hurting the efforts to have a Wisconsin economy that is centered so strongly on farm output.
Well, that's a great question, Pat. And quite frankly, I've spent my entire professional life doing the best I can in order to help our family farmers and our rural residents. Wisconsin is an agriculture state. We are also an animal agriculture state. Agriculture provides $105 billion annual economic impact to our state. The agriculture supply chain, we talk a lot about supply chains right now. The agriculture supply chain in this state is second to none. It is extremely advanced. You can take the milk that comes from a cow, and within hours, you have high quality, value added dairy products that consumers around the world want to be able to eat and enjoy. But the thing is this, we need to continue to make sure that we keep our farmers on the land. How we do that is we need to have federal policies coupled with state policies that continues to provide value-added opportunities for our farmers. I believe our farmers, can continue to produce the highest quality products. But in order to do that, we all recognize it needs to be done in a sustainable fashion. We need to invest in cover crops That is when you pull the corner soybeans off the field in September or October, you put a cover crop in place to make sure that that helps when it comes to nutrient, when it comes to soil health, water retention. All of that's very important, especially here in a landscape of the rolling hills, coulees, and valleys of western Wisconsin. We need to make sure that we provide our family farmers with incentives when it comes to watershed protection, so they can continue to protect these watersheds, because water is so very important. Pat, I received a 100% voting record from the League of Conservation Voters for my efforts in the Wisconsin State Legislature. At the same time, I was recognized by the Wisconsin Cheesemakers as a champion for the cheese industry, for the simple reason, and our champion for our farmers. The simple thing is this: I recognize that we can develop policies that meet these goals of keeping our landscape precious the way it is, and at the same time, investing in our family farmers. It's about creating value-added opportunities. May it be in organic products. As a state senator, I represent Organic Valley, the nation's largest organic dairy cooperative. May it be in organic. May it be in creating new grains to help when it comes to fighting climate. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of different things that we can do here by working together and continuing to invest in our family farmers and in our agriculture supply chain. And let's never forget that here in Wisconsin, agriculture is more than just economics. Economics is important, but agriculture is who we are. It's part of our life. Our license plates read Wisconsin, America's Dairyland. That tells a story. It tells a story of individuals, of families, and of communities. It tells a story of a state coming together and recognizing the values that bring us all together: hard work, dedication, and resilience.
We are being joined by State Senator Brad Paff, one of the candidates for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. Let's switch over to the repeal of Roe v. Wade and abortion care by the U.S. Supreme Court. There are plenty of places in the country, states or districts, that are solidly blue or solidly red, and therefore the answers are easy as to whether somebody supports either codifying Roe v. Wade or embracing this new 50-state checkerboard of rules and putting even more restrictions in place. You're in an extremely competitive district from a partisan standpoint, so you have people perhaps more than any place else evenly divided in how strongly they feel on this topic. Where are you?
Well, I'm pro-choice, but the thing is this. This is a very, very personal issue, and I just want to take a second and share my story. My wife and I have two children. When my wife was expecting our second child, she went into labor at 27 and a half weeks. She had preeclampsia. And through science and through medicine, 8 weeks later, she gave birth to a beautiful baby girl. Now our daughter, Lizzie, is 19 and a half years old. We wanted to have more children after Lizzie was born. And my wife and I met with our OB. I'll never forget what the OB said to the two of us. Said, there's no guarantee that what will happen next. The thing is this, Pat, when we were listening, when we had that meeting with our OB, there was no room in that doctor's office for partisan politicians or for Supreme Court justice. That was a one-on-one conversation that we had. We cannot, as a state of Wisconsin, go back to the 1849 law that's currently in place right now. I was the first Wisconsin state legislature, to ask the Governor Evers to call us into special session. I asked for that the very night that the Alito memo was leaked, because we cannot get back to 1849. We not only have to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law, and as a member of Congress, I will work hard to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law, but we need to codify Roe v. Wade into state law, into Wisconsin state law. We not only need to do that, we need to make sure that we continue to invest in reproductive health care. We need to continue to invest in our public health clinics. I have been a ferocious and tenacious advocate to make sure that we keep this as an individual choice. And the Supreme Court ruling in June, in my opinion, really set us back.
All right. Brad Paff is joining us, state senator, former state ag secretary, running for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District here in western Wisconsin. We will talk more with Brad after the break. Tomorrow on the program, we will have Robert Craig from Citizen Action Wisconsin in our 8 o'clock hour. And in our 10 o'clock hour tomorrow, Kirk Bankstead and Kristen Lyerly, who will join us for a regular weekly segment Wednesdays at 10 o'clock. And then candidate Mark Newman will be our guest in the 9 a.m. hour on Thursday. More with Brad Paff in just a moment. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News.
Here we go. From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I'll be with you in just a moment, folks. I'm checking my text messages. Joe Biden wants me to send him $3. Mandela Barnes is looking for $5. There's an old text I didn't answer from a Donald Trump wondering if he can bury a body on the Lake Wissota golf course. I will probably have to get back to him on that. We're going to concentrate instead for the rest of this hour on the 3rd Congressional District race in western and central Wisconsin. Brad Paff joins us. We had Rebecca Cook in our last hour, Deb Baldus McGrath in the 8 o'clock hour, Mark Newman in the 9 o'clock hour on Thursday. Brad Paff has worked for the incumbent Democratic Congressman Ron Kind. It's not the world's biggest surprise that he got the endorsement from Kind, even in a four-way primary. With that comes a lot of prestige, attention, and resources. But with it also comes, any residual baggage, because Ron Kind, had a record that was not always universally loved by every Democrat in the district. And that certainly continued on Friday when the congressman voted against an assault weapons ban, one of only 5 Democrats, I believe, to do that. So it's a fair question, Brad. Is that the kind of vote you would take as well? And what are you going to do as congressman if elected on gun safety issues?
Well, without a doubt, we need to focus on gun safety. That is very important. The thing is this, is that I firmly believe that we can protect the Second Amendment. At the same time, we need to keep our children safe and secure in schools. We can't have our children be fearful of going to school. The thing is what can we do? Well, immediately what we can do is we can pass universal background checks. That is something that is broadly supported in a bipartisan manner. But that next thing we need to do is we need to take a look at these ghost guns that are out there. The third thing that can be done is closing this Charleston loophole. That needs to take place. I have spoken in the past about red flags. We can protect people's due process and civil rights, but at the same time, if somebody is a threat to themselves as well as to their family members, that's where we need this red flags. And so we have to make sure we move forward there. And of course, the other thing we need to do, and Republicans talk an awful lot about mental health, well, they need to fund mental health. And I like to say that, we need to focus on that topic. Well, then let's fund it. Put their money where their mouth is. So those are 5 things that we can do immediately to make sure that, number one, we keep people safe, and keep them secure. And at the same time, we protect our Constitution. I think that's very important.
Well, let me seize on that for a moment. You talk about protecting the Constitution and protecting the Second Amendment, which means nothing if you're not protecting life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I guess I have to ask, what constitutes not protecting the Second Amendment? Is that what an assault weapons ban is in your mind? Is that now we're not protecting the Second Amendment if we get rid of semi-automatic weapons?
Well, first of all, I think there's no place on the streets for weapons of war. I mean, let me just be absolutely clear. There's absolutely no place for weapons of war. But I think we all recognize the fact that, if people here in Wisconsin and around the country, people enjoy the outdoors. We in Wisconsin, we've got a tremendous sporting heritage, and it brings together families. It brings together people and communities as they enjoy the great deer hunt in around Thanksgiving. I think all of that is very, very important.
But none of them are hunting with semi-automatic weapons, I don't think.
Right. I mean, I hear you on that. thing is the question becomes, is when we begin to have a conversation as far as when we start talking about shotguns and rifles, and we start talking about, you know, what is the definition? And that's an important conversation to have. I mean, I have been very clear. There is no place for weapons of war on our streets. We need to make sure that we keep our community safe, and that needs to be done. We need to make sure that we provide that mental health funding. We need to close the Charleston loophole. We got to get ghost guns off the street. And of course, I was happy that we finally had a little bit of movement on a bipartisan basis when it came to the red flags. I think all of that is an important important start. I think that, you know, assault rifles, I mean, I recognize the concerns out there. I mean, the thing is this, I have had conversations with Congressman Ronkind. I continue to speak with Congressman Ronkind. But what's important here is the fact that Derek Von Orden tried to get on an airplane with a handgun. Let's focus on Derek Von Orden and the fact that this individual had no problem with his judgment or his character or his temperament. He decided it is okay to get on an airplane with a handgun. And it's my understanding it was a loaded handgun. What is going on there?
Now, I definitely want to focus more on Van Orden here in the couple of minutes. And before we get to him, just to kind of stay in the same rhythm that we've stayed with some of the other candidates, a couple of other topic areas, and then we're going to get into, you know, protecting democracy and people like Van Orden. But let's turn our attention to climate, natural resources. We have a Supreme Court decision that recently basically put under threat the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, again, there is a school of thought or a talking point, you know, that we need fewer regulations. We need fewer red tape. Then there's some of us that, you know, don't call them regulations. They're safeguards. They're protections for consumers, for workers, for the environment. But again, you're in a very competitive district. Where do you find that balance between protecting our natural resources versus those who think that you can overdo it and create too much red tape or burdens on businesses, farms, and others?
Well, again, I would encourage everyone to take a look at my record. I've got 100% voting record with the League of Conservation Voters here in the state of Wisconsin. I've been endorsed by Clean Wisconsin. At the same time, I received an award as a Legislator of the Year from the Wisconsin Cheesemakers. I recognize the fact that we can find balance. What we have to do is we have to recognize the fact, the thing is these are not mutually exclusive goals. We can make sure that we continue to provide family-supporting jobs and create family-supporting jobs here in Western and Central Wisconsin, and also recognize the fact that our landscape is second to none. I represent the Driftless region here in the Wisconsin State Senate. I mean, the thing is this, is that it's our natural resources that draws people to this district. It is our wonderful landscape that makes that, you know, our ancestors came here and we never left. People come all the time. So how do we do this? Is we have to develop public policy that takes into account our natural landscape and our environment. But the thing is that with that West Virginia and EPA Supreme Court case is the fact that Congress didn't do its job. The reason why EPA was writing rules is because Congress was vague. Congress did not finish the work that they were supposed to do. And the thing is that as someone who has written policy, who's worked in order to try and find balance, the voters of this district will know that I am someone that understands how public policy is made. I have stood up to special interest in the past. And I have always fought for the people of this district. All right.
Let's turn then to some international issues, something that is going to be important for any member of Congress. It's not all about things back home, but, you know, what Congress does in terms of foreign policy. We don't have time to get into every little thing. So what I've done is, you know, you list a few of them, everything from, you know, Ukraine and China, trade with the EU and other allies and other adversaries. Even something as basic as passing veterans health legislation regarding burn pits for veterans who served, you know, overseas, things that don't happen in the 3rd Congressional District, but your vote would matter very much in any close vote in the House. What are your own priorities or areas of interest when it comes to international foreign policy issues?
Well, that's a very good question. And I thank you for asking that. I mean, I think, first of all, we always need to make sure that, we protect America's interest, America's vital interest. We always need to make sure that we recognize that the fact that, we have to make sure that the people back home here are safe and secure as well. And I will always, always do that. In order to do that, we need to make sure that we have an economy that is functioning. We also need to make sure that we have a diplomatic corps that is in place that continues to, reach out to our friends and neighbors, our allies, but also our adversaries from around the world. We need to be able to do that. We need to continue to participate in exchanges and learn from one another. All of that is extremely important. But the thing is this, is we need to make sure that we always recognize the fact that a member of Congress from Wisconsin 3rd Congressional District must represent the people in this district. And that means that they need to be listening, they need to be hearing firsthand the concerns that are taking place. Also recognize the fact that the important role that America plays within this world. Mm-hmm. And, I am proud of the fact that President Biden has organized the Western world and stood up to Putin in order to make sure that we don't have an aggressor from Moscow that just thinks he can walk into Ukraine and overtake another nation. I recognize the fact that we need to stand up, to China, and we need to make sure that we've got a manufacturing policy and a monetary and fiscal policy that recognizes the fact that we just cannot allow China to dictate the terms of economic and financial policy in this world.
Well, what one thing that they have in common are these authoritarian regimes, something we were dangerously close to, it seemed, for a time on January 6, 2021, a series of lies and a downright attempt at a coup, and something where the presumptive nominee was on the Capitol grounds on
yes,
that day.
Was. Yes, he was.
And so exactly you, right. If you win this primary, you're going to be on a debate stage at some point with Derek Van Orden. What's the message you want to deliver to him in front of the voters of the 3rd District?
Well, Derek Van Orden is a clear and present danger. He's a threat to our democracy. Derek Van Orden does not have the temperament, the judgment, or the character to serve in Congress. And we can't have him anywhere near Washington, D.C. The thing is this, Derek Van Orden does not know this district. He does not know the people or the communities of this district. He recently moved into this district prior to the 2020 election, and then he runs against Congressman Ron Klein. He didn't articulate any issues when he was running. Instead, it was just, bravado. The thing is this, the people of Western and Central Wisconsin, they know me. They know me. They know that I have stood up time and time again for their interest. They know I will continue to stand up for their interest. And I will stand up to make sure, regardless of political party, I will stand up to make sure the people of this district are heard and they get their fair share. I look forward to the opportunity to debate Derek Van Orden, and I hope we can do it multiple times.
Do you see any thing that needs to be done differently in terms of elections, security, accuracy, even allocation of resources? That are there any lessons to be learned from 2020, or is the main lesson of 2020 that a political class was willing to lie about it?
Well, the thing is that thank you for sharing that. I mean, I speak with my municipal clerks and county clerks all the time. And the thing is these are hardworking people. They're doing a good job and making sure that they're providing, individuals with the opportunity to vote. And the thing is that, I have stood shoulder to shoulder with Governor Tony Evers and fought against these voting restriction measures that the Republicans have tried to put in place in Madison. Now we've got this former Supreme Court Justice, Michael Gableman, that's wasting all of our taxpayer money, close to $1 million. And quite frankly, he's just boxing his shadows. There's absolutely nothing there.
You are being extremely kind to just say he's boxing at shadows compared to what he has done and what he has cost the taxpayers. And it's something that should be before the legislature more often in terms of oversight. I am sure the constituents appreciate what you're doing for that in the legislature. And we'll see what you do as a congressman, too, if you emerge from Tuesday's primary. Brad Path, it was a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for articulating where you are on the issues and for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a great opportunity. Appreciate it.
Great. And again, fourth candidate to talk to, Mark Newman, will be the 9 o'clock hour on Thursday. We will be back to wrap up the show in just a minute. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News.
Kick the dust up. Kick the dust up.
Welcome back. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We have heard from three of the four candidates on the Democratic side running for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. Hope you enjoyed that. If you have any feedback on it, questions to ask other candidates between now and November, our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Again, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Don't forget the WI if you're looking for our website or for us on social media. And we'll look to take calls in some future segments, but I knew I had a lot of ground I wanted to cover with the candidates. But if you've still got your pen handy, our line here is 715-388-7155. And again, we'll look for doing more listener interaction in future shows, especially if we start doing more trivia questions, Luke, because we had one yesterday, and I don't know if you ever saw that I answered that question for you. We opened the show, as always, with Stevie Ray Vaughan and Crossfire, and you did not know who the drummer was for Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I did not, but you so kindly sent it over to me, and honestly, I've forgotten since, because yesterday was a little bit of a whirlwind, and I know that I saw it, and that's
and since you say, which again simply involved typing into a Google search bar,
right.
But Chris Layton it was the drummer for Double Trouble, and talked a bit about that final album from Stevie Ray Vaughan. They were talking about a breakup, and yet somehow these songs came together, and Chris Layton was one of the co-writers of it. So we've got our musical trivia answer for today. You were mentioning that we played a little bit of Don Henley from The Boys of Summer, because and I'm not seeing it yet, but you see Don Henley is a contributor to somebody in the Wisconsin race for governor.
Yes, J.R. Ross over at wispolitics.com tweeted it out earlier, going over some of the campaign finance disclosures that are coming out with the most recent reporting deadline. Looks like Don Henley was a campaign contributor to one of those gubernatorial candidates here in the state of Wisconsin. Do we want to use that as our trivia? Should we?
Oh, no. I mean, it's Don Henley. If you can't figure out he's supporting Tony Evers over the Republicans, then you don't know Don Henley, and you need to never listen to the Eagles again. But yeah, it just made me wonder, as a legislator and a candidate for Congress, why I never thought to hit up Don Henley for $1,000. You know, that's pocket change for him, right?
Probably. So I would, yes, J.R. Ross reporting that was on the campaign finance disclosure reports for incumbent Governor Tony Evers.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, because that we get that from J.R., because we have some of the most amazing political journalists in this state. And I used to be one of them, not one of the better ones, but one that was just as dedicated. And so to that end, you will hear me occasionally criticize some of the work that comes out of newsrooms. It's part of why we started Up North News. We are so against both sidesism when both sides is not required to accurately and more completely tell a story. But the fact remains, we have people like J.R. Ross, and another that I want to single out, and that is Patrick Marley, who until recently was at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I, along with a lot of folks, were kind of sad to see that he had been plucked away by the Washington Post. But the last thing that they would do with him is just send him to, you know, tromp around New Hampshire or Iowa or whatever. He's still reporting on Wisconsin issues and has managed to, you know, break another story today in the Washington Post. The headline is "Memo Shows Wisconsin GOP Lawyer Privately Opposed Decertifying Biden's 2020 Win." And of course, we are talking about the Inspector Clouseau of Wisconsin. That would be one Michael Gableman, the right-wing former justice of the state Supreme Court, who has now wasted more than $1 million of tax dollars investigating something that doesn't exist, shadow boxing, as Brad Paff put it. And he's somebody who has said we should look into decertification, which, again, not a thing. And especially now, you know, 2 years into it, just about, imagine if any time, well, are we going to go back and relitigate the Illinois results from 1960 and declare that Richard Nixon was president instead? At some point, much like Al Gore said in 2000, you move on because the country has to. And instead, Donald Trump has continued a movement that pushes for this non-existent decertification as a way to further divide Americans from one another. So, as Patrick Marley writes in the Washington Post, it was an extraordinary public statement from a former state Supreme Court justice hired by Republican lawmakers to probe the 2020 election. Wisconsin should take a, quote, hard look at canceling Joe Biden's victory and revoking the state's 10 Electoral College votes. The comments that were made in March drew applause from a packed hearing room in the state capitol. Phrase from former President Donald Trump, but a newly unearthed memo shows that former Justice Michael Gableman soon afterward offered a far different analysis in private. Gableman wrote to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, quote, "While decertification of the 2020 presidential election is theoretically possible, it is unprecedented and raises numerous substantial constitutional issues that would be difficult to resolve. Thus, the legal obstacles to its accomplishment render such an outcome a practical impossibility." Well, what the hell are we still paying you for? Honestly, the widespread fraud that didn't exist, the only thing he's existing to do right now and that taxpayers are funding are a series of lawsuits over the way that Gableman has conducted his investigation. Most notably in these legal cases, his failure to follow the law when it comes to open records, to public records. It's been the subject of multiple lawsuits. And under the lawsuits, there has been courtroom demands for some of Gableman's records. That memo was released under the state's open records law to the watchdog group American Oversight, which then shared it with Patrick Marley at the Washington Post. And so that is, as the American Oversight executive director Heather Sawyer says, decertification is, quote, a fiction designed to advance conspiracy theories and undermine confidence in our democracy. And frankly, you know, mission accomplished on that front. But this is not one where all the toothpaste is out of the tube and there's no sense even trying. And I do hear that from people, and I take great issue with that. We can, in fact, undo a lot of this damage, but it is going to take time. In part because people do not like to admit that they were wrong. And even if they never stated, you know, the big lie, they still may have harbored and expressed doubts about election integrity, when in fact, Gableman and others have determined there's nothing there. There's no there there. They got flim-flammed by the ultimate flim-flam man in Donald Trump. And as more people recognize that, we can begin to move forward with continued fair elections that are accurate and that give us the leadership we need rather than those advancing conspiracy theories. That's our show for today. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me at upnorthnewswi.com for my daily newsletter, and we will see you back here tomorrow morning at 8.